Good evening. It's Saturday night, February 14th. Steve Barish and I are at the Los Angeles Airport Hilton conducting the Conscious Life Expo. Yeah, we're there doing our thing. Too bad you're not with us. But anyhow, tonight's going to be fun. You're going to hear a really interesting auric explanation I did back in the Seattle conference a while back, followed by the continuation of 2 weeks ago, the UFO panel. So let's see if Dr. Bell is available here. I'm going to see what he's up to, you know. And as soon as I get him up and running. Yeah, it started a little rough, but it gets pretty clear.
Check your karma out with God, you know.
Yeah. Okay, I'll go back talk on the microphone.
Today what I'm going to talk about...
Here we go.
A little bit about some of the Pleiadian science, show you a couple of things, and my topic will have holes in it because I can't cover everything. I want to just cover an aspect today, so you'll probably enjoy it, but at the same time, tomorrow when we do the workshop, we have more time, and we've got a couple hours, and I have slides and stuff to give you more basic background, because I'm going to skip a few steps about how the body works. Today I want to talk about the aura fields and how important they are, because we're coming into a time when it's very important to understand that part, that mechanic of the body. At the same time, a little bit about divine intervention from the Andromedans. Now, how many of you saw me speak last year here? Okay, for those of you that didn't, last year I did a long talk in the very beginning, which killed a lot of my science time, about how the Greys made contact with the government and how their science and technology evolved and how the Pleiadians had also made contact with different governments in the world and were rejected. So that, if you go down, if you're interested in today, you can go down for a few dollars and get last year's tape, and it'll be like a preamp to the one to what we're doing today, what we're talking about. But one of the things that's real interesting is that the Andromedans, not the Andromedans, but the Reticulans, which are called the Greys, which I portray to be a non-friendly alien group, at least in my imagination, I don't see them as doing anything really good. In one of Bill Herman's books, published by Wendell Stevens, they made a comment that the Earth is headed into a type of destruction because it's tuned to the growth-resistant generation. And that's a real interesting statement in itself. And that was something truthful coming from the Greys, and they typically have a tendency to tell a lot of lies. The growth-resistant generation has a profound effect on the world because of the summation of all the aura fields. You see, if you were to take all the energies in here, in this room right now, and combine them into one aura field, chances are it would be a fairly positive effect in combination with the aura field of a plant or an animal or nature or the planet itself. But if you were to go somewhere out of this room and away from this convention, maybe over here to the park or downtown or into a more metropolis area, the aura field down there would be the opposite of what's here. And the aura field that's down there that's the opposite of what's here is still the major factor on this earth. And that aura field presents a problem when you realize that we have a solar system here. And our solar system, each planet has an aura field on it, every one of them, from Mercury all the way out to Pluto. All have aura fields of some sort. And when you realize that these aura fields of these planets are probably more conjunct with the aura fields of the people in here. And then you take the Earth, and the Earth having this negative aura field, there's going to be a problem at some time when the Jupiter effect takes place, meaning when planets align, the moon gets a certain way, there's going to be some conflict between the Earth and different parts of the solar system. And this causes backlashes. It causes, first of all, an eruption on the sun, which creates a technical phenomenon known as solar wind. The solar wind bombards the outer atmosphere of this planet. When this happens, man's emotions are triggered, even worse. This negativity increases. It doesn't get better. It doesn't heal itself. It becomes vehement. And when this happens, it triggers the tectonic plates down in the Earth's core and triggers earthquakes and make great tidal changes and tidal waves and things like that. Another way to look at it, one thing that the Pleiadians talk about in a lot with our Pleiadian systems technologies that we work with is the new moon and the full moon. Anybody ever notice the difference in your energies between a new moon and a full moon? When you do a scientific study on a human, you start realizing that a human is mostly water. When you look at what the new moon and the full moon does with the relationship to the ocean, it causes tides. As a matter of fact, there are 30 different tide changes in a month. You know, we have a full tide and a receding tide, but the tide is not the same every day. At one point, the tide is very small, the tidal changes between the moons. When the moon gets full again, it gets strong. This moon goes around the Earth. It rotates around the Earth. It's not very far away. It has a rotational speed of about 1,000 miles an hour as it goes around the Earth, and it's 240,000 miles away. The body has in it organs called capillaries, which are also known as endocrine glands. Within these endocrine glands are hormones. Tomorrow I'll talk about the fact of what hormones, how you change your hormone structure around, but today just realize that hormones are there. These hormones are inside our bodies in seven different areas. These seven different areas are called endocrine glands, and these endocrine glands are hooked to an antenna system that either causes these organs, these endocrine glands, to constrict or to relax. This mechanism that causes the constriction or the relaxation of the endocrine gland is also known as the chakra system. And the chakra system works on a yin and yang energy, which I'll demonstrate before you leave today. The organs themselves respond to vibration, meaning the endocrine glands respond to vibration. And when they secrete these hormones into the bloodstream, depending on how your system works, these organs, these hormones go up to the brain and turn the brain off and on in different switching patterns. The hormones are defined by the Pleiadians as being the first element of biochemistry in a human or anywhere else that contain consciousness. How many of you heard of the ELF and all the toxins in the foods and all the bad stuff? All of this stuff that you hear about, everything from food preservatives, radiation of bread, all the things that the governments and the manufacturers do to the world in the ELF ways are targeted to do one thing, to destroy the complete production of the hormone system on a nutritional level and an electrical level, as in the case of ELF. And when this happens, consciousness degrades. This has been, in a nutshell, what the Greys have been doing for a long time. Pleiadians, on the other hand, have been educating and strengthening the actual integrity of the human so it can withstand the stress of this attack on the hormonal systems of the body. Okay? Now, if you were to look, I made a statement earlier in the UFO panel. I made a statement earlier that radiation, I was at the University of Michigan when I was a young kid. We were looking at radiation and the effects of people from the Nagasaki and Hiroshima bomb blasts in Japan. We found people very close to the fireball, the ground zero, the radiation, the flash point, however you want to call it. They got hit with massive quantities of gamma rays and X-rays and all the different rays, ultraviolet rays, infrared rays, everything that bomb, because it's a full-spectrum radiation generator. And people right close to that bomb blast had no long-term negative effects in some cases. Some people were incinerated by it, some weren't. Other people further away, 30, 40 miles away, had tremendous radiation after effects. Well, why would people up front close to the bomb getting blasted with all this radiation not have a negative effect, and some others do? The answer we found was in the electrolytes. If you have a car, a beautiful brand new Rolls-Royce or Ferrari, and you don't have a battery in it, what have you got? You got nothing. You got a useless piece of metal and rubber and wires and plastic. If you put a battery in it and you don't have the battery properly lubricated, meaning if the battery doesn't have electrolytes in it itself, doesn't function. The body has to have electrolytes. One of the big things, for example, the FDA is trying to do right now in the truth and labeling is take away your herbs. You need those herbs because of the amount of radiation, for example, we're getting from the ozone layer. Huge amounts. But it's literally impossible to have any effects from radiation when you realize what it does. As a matter of fact, you can thrive on it. You can be energized by it if you change your system around a little bit. How many of you in here know what exactly happens to your body when you get hit with radiation? What's the destructive damage? Does anybody know? It's a two-word term. Does anybody know what it is? No. It's called free radicals. Radiation produces free radicals. So does badly processed vegetable oil, rancid oil, produces free radicals. It's the same thing. When you get down to biochemistry, you're going to get the same thing from radiation or some rancid oil in your body or rancid foods. Another thing that is going on right now is when the ozone layer was discovered to be going, you know, south, going bad, the government realized right away, and it was published in the Global 2000 Report in 1981, which is a huge congressional expenditure from the Reagan administration, the Carter administration, and released during the Reagan administration. And it clearly said that the problem with the ozone layer is not fluorocarbons, it's high-flying jet aircraft. You've got 200 to 500 airliners from different countries flying at a very high altitude, the SST at 60,000 feet, with tailpipe temperatures of thousands of degrees, and you think that has a smaller effect than a spray can? Like, give me a break. How stupid can we be, you know? And they still... So what they did is they created a big industry now behind this fake rumor of the ozone layer, and that is that they charge you now a lot more money for refrigerants that don't work very well, that are no less toxic than the ones that were there, have nothing to do with the ozone layer. So they create industry out of ignorance. And America's famous for that. Good old capitalists, you know. You'll see in Europe that they're creating industry out of ecology, and you'll see a lot of it in Germany and Sweden and a lot of the northern European countries where they're really doing something to this planet. But here it's a joke. The bureaucracy stinks here, as we well know. These are the kinds of things that politically enter into this. Now, when you couple this with the fact of what happens, you know, what do we do negative to the body to feed upon the bad ozone layer? Well, the ozone layer and ultraviolet radiation in a weak human being attacks the immune system. So not only did they give us a false prediction of what and pretense of where this ozone destruction was coming from, and invest lots of research dollars, the different research groups went down to South Pole to verify that the thing was going bad. But on top of that, they started to introduce into our populace, starting clear back in 1960 with giving 1 million people in Mobile, Alabama, cancer shots, you know, the cancer virus, and see what that would do, how that would spread. They started attacking our immune systems. And that's exactly what goes on today. In the early 70s, they had herpes 1, 2, and 3 down, and they jammed that into colleges. It's a good place for that one to go, because kids like to have a lot of sex, and it's a great sexual thing. And basically, they were looking for birth deformities and birth defects. That wasn't good enough, so they had a meeting in the early 70s in Langley, back in Virginia, with the CIA and some senators and some congressmen, and they were talking about the big program, which was exposed to the world under its real name, the Hay-Kissinger Depopulation Policy, which came out, was announced in 1981 in the Executive Intelligence Review, a publication out of Washington. And what they found out was they decided to introduce into mankind something really devastating to slow the population explosion down. And so that was the birth of the sheep Vishnu virus and the cattle bovine virus married in the homosexual community in the creation of AIDS. When this was created in 1978, it was distributed to 2,000 homosexuals in San Francisco, and it spread. By 1980, all 2,000 of them were dead, and by now there had been enough cross communication with these animal viruses into humans that they had a nice thing that could spread all over the world. Strangely enough, no gorilla, no ape ever had AIDS. Isn't that interesting? Now, the latest thing, that wasn't enough. That wasn't enough. So they had to go a little bit further. The next step was, let's really freak them out. Let's take some of the most fertile, healthy rainforests in the world in South America and bring out of there a pseudo made up strain which comes from a laboratory called Ebola and Ciboli bacteria. Let's lay that on them. And that's what they're doing now. Do you know what that stuff does? Ever read about it? It's been in Popular Science. It's been in Scientific American. You got a little cold one day. The next day, your blood is clotting and you're having a stroke. And if that doesn't get you by the third or fourth day, you just bleed to death because your blood turns into something less than water and just runs out of all the pores in your body. That's for real. Okay, that's what's coming. So I think it's important, you know, yeah, the extraterrestrials are here. The Andromedans are going to make themselves known. Divine intervention is taking place. I'm just showing you what's on the chalkboards if you really want to know on the scientific community from what I call the assholes of the world that run this planet. You know, that's what's coming, and you can see it. One of the first things we do, for example, with the Pleiadians, and I didn't understand this when Semyasi got me really into nutrition. I started formulating vitamins back in the 70s, late 70s, when I was with the National Health Federation fighting off the FDA for American freedom. And I suddenly started to realize, when I started getting this extraterrestrial input, that most of the biochemistry, because the Pleiadians teach biochemistry, vitamins, nutrition, drugs, foods, one level, then they teach another level above biochemistry, which is called electrical frequencies, effects of all electricity, and then they go back to the highest level, a third level, electrical precursation. What has to be in the environment to make electricity to flow, to tell your body to metabolize something? You know, some people need certain nutrients and makes good things happen to them. Other people, nothing happens. They need something else. Why? The common denominator goes back up to electrical precursation. That is where the common denominator falls down to the nutritional world. So, Pleiadians taught us how to build our frequency level, our frequency bodies up through biochemistry. They taught us biochemistry. In our formulas, for example, we started creating formulas. We used huge amounts of carotene, huge amounts of palmitate, 40,000 units of that a day in a normal dosage in one of our formulas. And then they started to educate us on what happens when you get sick, because they said, nobody in this world seems to understand what you do when you start getting a runny nose, which could lead to something really serious. What do you normally do when you start to get a runny nose or a sore throat? What's the first vitamin you'd put in your body? Which is the wrong one. What if it's a virus? And a lot of times it is. You don't think viruses like vitamin C, good or bad? A virus is called a tetrahedral structure. It binds up the body on a tetrahedral vibratory frequency. The body likes an octahedron. It wants a four-sided pyramid, top and bottom, like the blood cell, for example. That's what it wants. So you're feeding a tetrahedral alien invader. Vitamin C is fine. Wrong vitamin. Put something else in the body. Go to the core of why the body... What happened in the body to let the stupid octahedral source come in there and invade and stop the production of tetrahedral cells? Go back a step. Go back. To give you a clue, body is 5% mineral. That little statement created what's called the science of homeopathy. It's thousands of years old. It got up to Louis Pasteur's time, and all of a sudden they decided they'd pasteurize the foods because the problem of Pasteur's time with sanitation. So they pasteurize these foods, and therefore they could sterilize their garbage and feed it to you and create drugs on the side. And that was the birth of allopathic medicine 100 years ago. So homeopathic medicine became ostracized in this country, and then the smarter ones began to sneak it in, but it was blocked for a long time for those very reasons. So if homeopathic medicine is based on the body's 5% mineral and like cures like, the first thing you want to put into your body when you get sick is intelligence. It's chromium. Chromium. Chromium is the first thing you put in. That immediately talks to the immune system. Tomorrow when I explain how the vitamins and minerals work in the body electrically, those of you who come to my workshop, I'll show you what chromium does, and I'll demonstrate to what it does. The chromium is the first thing you put in, and then you go back and you step in and you put in vitamin A. Once vitamin A is in, then you start building the system up with vitamin C, because now you've gone 1, 2, 3 and set your system back the way it should be. Pleiadians teach us, first of all, the rainbow. We have 7 different colors in the rainbow, red all the way down to violet. Each color is a consciousness. Each color is a consciousness. We are made up of oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, and carbon. Hydrogen is a proton and it's an electron. The hydrogen atom changes its frequency as the sun goes across the sky. It's animated from different planes. They teach us that each color is a plane of consciousness. The red starts out as the will. The blue starts out as love, the heart. Green starts out as the throat chakra, intellect, and so on down. You get down into yellow, for example, it's yellow color is compassion. Strangely enough, yellow is a color that is very necessary for digestion. So they taught us not only the colors, but they taught us how these things work. In the morning when you get up, the energy comes from the 7 levels, 7 different levels of consciousness, 7 planes, and the red animates the proton, and the violet animates the electron. As the day changes, as we rotate around the sun, during the day, the earth changes on its rotational period, on its axis. Colors change. And so when the evening comes, the sunset, we have violet over here, and we have red over here. This change changes our consciousness. Did you ever notice that you have a different consciousness in the morning when you get up versus what you have at midnight? You don't even think the same. Everything is different. The hydrogen atom. This atom is polarized in each human being. In other words, here, if you're from Washington, when you get up in the morning, you know without an alarm clock the time to get up, right? You know approximately when the sun's coming up, even when you don't see it, because your body clock tells you. Your body clock is one of the 7 endocrine glands in the body. There's 7 different ones. Each one has hormones in it. The one that happens to be the one that tells you what to do when you get up in the morning is known as the pineal gland. It's the most active gland in your body, and by the Western world, the least talked about and less known. Pleiadians teach you from this gland on. They teach us that in the morning when the sun comes in, the energy of the sun coming through the hydrogen atom in the body is the will. You've got to have some kind of a motivating force. It manifests as a color red through the will, causing serotonin to subside and different other hormones in the body to be triggered through the pituitary, and you get out of bed. If you don't have the will to get out of bed, you don't get out of bed. And that's the way the body works on all different levels. Second thing I want to show you now is if you had a battery with a positive terminal on it and a negative terminal on it, and you put a wire across it, electricity moves negative to positive through this wire, creating a magnetic field at right angles. Pretty common, right? If you switch the polarity, the electricity collapses in here, the field collapses. We put the battery positive over here, negative over here, the electricity starts up again the other direction. So if you were to map this switching of polarity of the battery, you would see a field building with positive and negative magnetic variations. Okay, that's basic physics. Everybody understand that? Anybody not understand that? Go into the brain. The brain has a series of switches in it that are capable of reversing polarity. These switches, called receptors and effectors, are also known as a group called synapses, are connected out of the base of the brain to 72,000 major wires going all the way through the spinal cord, distributing themselves to the heart, spleen, kidney, liver, to the base of the spine down here. The base of the spine has what's called cerebrospinal fluid in it. Very important fluid to work with when you start tuning your bodies up. Coming in are hormones. These hormones come in to the brain and they turn on and turn off these switches. In the process of turning on and turning off and reversing the polarity of these switches, electricity is sent in large amounts through these synapses. The magnetic energy that's right angle to that is known as the magnetic aura. Does everybody understand that? It's real simple. If you wanted to go, for example, from one set of reactions, like say from having sex to meditation, or from eating to running, you got to come in there with a set of hormones and erase this polarity and set up a whole new map, a whole new map of energies. A hormone called acetylcholine does that. What is acetylcholine? It's a couple of amino acids. It's biotin and choline. So if you don't have that in your daily diet under stress, when you get old, you don't have the erasure, so your mind becomes a blank and you have Parkinson's disease. So diseases come from the breakdown of the system. Okay? Now, one of the things that's real interesting is that when you work with a system on a mechanical level, we also have to have oxygen fed in here, for example. Oxygen comes into the brain via the lungs. From the lungs into the heart, up to the base of the brain. Over a period of years, a problem starts in humans, and that is that the arterial size, the arteries, are very large coming up through the lungs and the heart, the aorta valve, to the base of the brain. But you get into the base of the brain, which is responsible for balance, all the arteries that flow, all the blood and all the oxygen through the body, because it goes through the brain first. These arteries are millionths of an inch. So it starts filling up with sludge after a while. Brain sluggishness results, poor electrical or a short circuiting or a failure. Okay? Some of you wonder why I wear a pyramid on my head. What the pyramid does is it allows you to get your balance back. A lot of people can't walk around on one foot anymore, touch the ground, come back, and still balance, especially with high-heeled shoes on like I have on here, because we lose our balance. So pyramids, Pleiadians introduced these to us in 1974, as far as wearing them on the head, and it detoxes all this and brings the energy back. Now also, what's really interesting is this energy here has a polarity to it. You've heard of the yin and yang force, right? Most people can't handle the yin force, the female force. If you start looking at how these electricities are deciphered by the brain going through the body, you'll start finding that a lot of people have chakras, or chakras that interpret polarity wrong. Meaning that, first of all, one human trait is during a full moon, for example, when the surface tension is very high, a person could be standing here, somebody could come up behind them and say, boo, they go, wow, you scared the heck out of me. Another time, you could go up and say boo to somebody and they turn around and say, hey, how you doing? I haven't seen you in a while. Same energy transgression, different entire reaction. Okay? A lot of that has to do with the polarities of the chakras. Now I can just show you how the polarity is, how profound it is on a human being. Come up here for a second. I just want to show you something. Just turn around. Put your arm straight out. Okay, I'll make a fist. Now resist. No, let me push your arm out. Resist. Resist. Hold your arm up. There we go. Okay, now put the pyramid on. Okay, now resist again. Resist. Now reverse the pyramid. Resist. Resist. Okay. Sit down. See, it has a polarity to it. This really works. It's a very strong effect. It's profound when you get into this over a period of time. Second thing about auras is you need, in order for this, or to work up here, the switching to go working with the vibratory frequencies coming in, you need electrolytes in the brain. And the brain is full of them. These are added to by Fotai, Ginseng, Gotokoa. Now, why do we need to add to our electrolytes? Because carbon monoxide dries them out. You know, if you took a banana and laid it out there, a fresh banana on a table, and took a hair blower to it, in about 5 minutes you'd have one dried out banana from that hair blower turned at maximum power. That's exactly what happens to your brain when you breathe in oxygen full of 500 different pollutants, which would be in this room right now, and over a period of time, let those stay in your brain without doing something about them. Okay? So you need it, vitamin E also helps. We use what are called oxidants in our formulas and other, and I recommend people take large amounts of vitamin E and ginseng. But these are some of the things you need to know to deal with this. Now, perception. That's the next thing. Okay, perception. Okay, we have eyes. All right, we have ears. In order to perceive anything visually, you have to have a set of hormones arriving at the brain, switching this magnetic field so fast up and down the spine that you can perceive visible light waves. Okay? If you're really sensitive with that, you can see auras on other people. If you're like most people, you're not so sensitive with that, you can perceive a color. You ever know some people have eagle eyes in the dark and other people just kind of grope around in the dark? It's not that they aren't created equal or unequal. It's that you build your perceptive powers up. That's really important. It's done through the aura field. It's like hearing. Some people have perfect pitch. Like you can play a note on a piano, they'll know, oh, that's F sharp major. You know, they'll know exactly what it is because they can hear it and it stands out. Other people say, I heard a note. I don't know what it was, but it was a middle note or it was a high note. Perception of sound is very important. Pleiadian sciences teach us about perception of sound. One of the things they teach us, why we got into music, for example, was sound pollution. One of the heaviest things that destroys our integrity of our life expansion on the aura field level is sound pollution. You don't realize it. What, you know, like, for example, when the Brahmins received the knowledge in the Pleiades, the teachers were called the Rishis. What is the first thing the Brahmin science teaches, which a lot of people here would accept, first sound of creation is Aum, sound. But what if that sound is a police siren or an ambulance instead of Aum? What happens? The cells...
Well, let's see if there's a backside to this tape. So, otherwise, we're going to finish up with I'll get the follow-on tape from it. Let me just see if this thing's got a backside to it or not. Otherwise, we're going to have to finish it up with the UFO panel. And we're testing here. We're waiting to see if there's any more on this puppy. And sometimes when we get cut off,
we sent the sounds over here. We did analysis on them. And she said humans have to build up their alpha frequencies, their beta, delta, and theta frequencies. They really need to hear this sound. You know, this hard rock music, like bands like Motorhead, what do? It's a negative sound, and they have violence. We need the opposite of that because there's so much of that negative sound being a universal language anyway on this planet. So we got into the sound composition of a Pleiadian ship. We broke it down with spectrum analyzers, and we found that there were certain low frequencies that were hooked together, and these are called timbers. And Semyonsky said to use the synthesizer technology and duplicate the timbre frequencies and bring it out to the world, which we did. Timbre is when you have a piano playing middle C and you have a flute playing middle C. Same note, same chord, different instrument. In Tibet, they have consciousness-raising Pleiadian devices, which one is, you know, is a sitar. The next thing that came step down from that would be the violin, which was brought to the European culture, also raises consciousness. It wasn't until modern synthesizers' time came we could really put tremendous amounts of timbre back into the music where you'd have a high experience from it and really get out there with it. This is what this music did. All part of the aura feeling. Next problem we have is general pollutants. For example, major poisons in the body short-circuit the aura. And I'll demonstrate that. This is a major poison. How many of you have heard of glue sniffing? Well, this is the stuff they use. See the skeleton and the crossbones. Okay. You want to come back up for another muscle test? I like you because you're a good tester. First of all, I got to unload all this stuff off of me so I give it a fair test. Sometimes you test somebody, you got your own stuff on, you're influencing them. Okay. Same test. Arm back out. This will be a more fun one than the other one. Can I resist? Resist. Okay, strength. All right. Now, whoa. See if this is the real thing. Is that the real thing?
Oh.
Yeah, it's the real thing. Here, you put that in this hand. Okay, now don't be afraid of it. It's not going to hurt you. Now just breathe it a little bit. Let's see what you're doing here. Oh, that it? Hey, hold on a minute. You feel the difference?
Oh, yeah.
A lot stronger with the glue, right? Okay. It's higher. Let's say that.
Yeah.
Okay, now put the glue back up. Take a nice whiff. Resist. Boy, you can handle 200 pounds.
I did that.
Yeah. Big difference. Very noticeable. Okay? That's called a nuclear receptor. You have to tune these to your hydrogen atom. Seven different frequencies or seven different colors in the stone. If you look at it, when you get a chance to look at one of these, you'll see when you wear it, you got pyramids right side up, you got pyramids upside down. Okay? Now, let me show you something about time and space, because we're talking about, you got to get in time and space before you get into intervention, because I said I'd talk about that. Okay, everybody has the basic idea here, right? Okay, this is just this is like a comic presentation out of an encyclopedia, and it's fun. Okay, we have larger devices, but here we're looking at a pyramid on this dish, on this parabolic lens, that has a positive aspect to it, because it's like this, sitting about like that on that dish. Then we have pyramids coming up in the middle, and we have pyramids upside down, the female energy, which would make us weaker. We have all of these focused to a focal point here. So we get the positive yang energy, and you get the negative yin energy. Okay, they come together out here in a neutral point. When they come together in a neutral point, there's a hole in the thing with the Anan mantra on the back. And the reason the Anan mantra is there, it's Tibetan, it acts like a microwave filter. It gets rid of unwanted radiation. Because all you want, once we find out from muscle testing, what color you're weak in, which is part of your hydrogen atom up here, this energy has to come back and hit your body. When it comes back to your body in its pure form, let's say you test weak in green. Your thyroid is weak. You're weak. You don't think clearly, or you're overweight possibly, or underweight. It comes back over here. You know about the science of homeopathic remedies, right? Some of you might know. If you had a 10x solution, you'd have something diluted 10 times in water or alcohol to work as a cure for something. And the one thing I want to say when I mention cure, you always heal yourself. These don't heal you. You have to heal yourself. These only break down barriers that your body's having to overcome to heal yourself. Don't ever let anybody tell you that a vitamin or this heals you. You always do it yourself. But if you have a 10x cure, it's only 10 times diluted. Now, if you want something 1,000 times more powerful, it's now 1,000x on the bottle, but it's 1,000 times more diluted. So there's 1,000 parts of water to one part of the poison or the healing remedy in homeopathic medicine. That's the way these work. What these do is they synthesize a color. They synthesize a color perfectly so that when you wear it, you are getting a reference point on your body, let's say green. And in your body, this thing is shooting back into your body, green, in this perfect integrity, because we use an emerald, okay? Now, can you see me? I'm sure you can see me in the dark. All right, so green comes out on the aura field. And I already had those lights set, by the way. I had the outside lights on, too, because I always balance. I don't like to use these lights because they put out a hazardous radiation. So what happens is this green references perfect green. Your body is now getting radionically involved with green. So now your remember your body's oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, and carbon. Now the hydrogen atom, which has seven colors on it, at least has a good reference point now on the light body, on the electrical body, and on the electrical precursing body. Now elements like vitamin C that you put in your body, because vitamin C is a third ray vitamin, for example, will properly go into your system and your assimilation goes up. We found, for example, people wearing the pyramid assimilate vitamin C, which also helps 500 times more efficiently than people not wearing it. We did this with studies back east at some schools back there. Now, getting past this technical part, because this could go on forever explaining all this stuff. But let's go to perception. Okay, now, perception. Okay, the next thing that happens is that we have a human being right here with an aura, Person A. Okay. We have person B. This is the first time I've tried this fast approach to get a point across, so I've never done this lecture before. Okay, so look, here's person B, here's person C. Okay, A, B, and C. Okay, first of all, person A exists on the planet all by themselves. They have no personality whatsoever, right? Then suddenly person B is here. As soon as the second person shows up, these auras interwave, agree, disagree, partially agree, and you have personality, right? This personality creates motion, and you bring a third party in, and you've got a major motion between three beings. It takes three, and these beings will hate, love, kill, reproduce, whatever, and this action creates what's called karma. If they reproduce a lot, create lots of people, all of this builds up as karma, what's going on immediately here in this encounter, in this time, in this moment, in this space. But what happened yesterday with them leaves a trail, a wake. That's called dharma. Okay, so you have dharma and karma, these two things working with society. Now, let's just say that person... Now, the second thing that happens is, anytime you have karma or dharma, you have to have a field, a platform for this to work on, okay? You have to have, like if I went up here and just pounded you on the knee, you'd say, I didn't like that. He's got some anger going there, possibly. Or if he's really high, he might forgive me. But there's definitely, bam, emotional energy, right? Emotion is astral energy. Emotional is astral energy. This karma situation creates what's known as the astral plane. Astral plane, okay? That's what it is. Person C over here has an accident. He goes up in his astral body. He's got six bodies that utilize, not seven. So he goes up here. Person C is up here. And when person A and B, if it's a male, female, have sex, boom, person C is back on the physical again. This motion between karma, dharma, A, B, and C is what organized religion has created their power from. When you get way up in the diocese of the Pope, the Archbishop, they can teach you this stuff, okay? Pleiadians do it freely. The religions empower and enslave by it. And in the Renaissance period, when they had the alchemists were talking about divine consciousness. They masked it with symbols of chemicals and elements. It had to be kept, okay? This is what it's all about. This is why it's so critical. The Andromedans have come along, and they're performing an act of divine intervention. And what that means is they can fool around with this stuff. Now, the Pleiadians were here and still come to different groups on this planet, and they come, but the Pleiadians cannot physically get directly involved with any action or affair on the Earth. If they do, they create their dharma mixes with our dharma, and that creates karma, and they'll go back to war. Pleiadians are like, as Sannyasi used to say, humans have an auric stench. She could be here 3 or 4 hours running around outside of her ship. In Switzerland, she could go longer. In the United States, she couldn't last too long because it's more of a dense vibe. In Switzerland, they're up higher. It's cleaner. Here, it's polluted. Cities are a real problem. New York is not a place you'd find Sannyasi walking the streets. So, they left. They pulled out. The first wave of the Pleiadian emissaries left. And now the second wave comes. I was a contactee. I trained many contactees with Pleiadians. They pull back. Pleiadian has a lifespan 1,000, 1,200, 1,500 years. Dromedans came. When Sannyasi left in 89, I sort of already knew why she was leaving, but at the same time, I was kind of sad and my emotional body was being pulled a little bit because Liara, who became the contactee lady with the Dromedans, wasn't so emotional, very heady, very mental. And it was real interesting because it was in November of 89 that I got my indoctrination. Now, I'm just sharing this with you. This is a little drama here, you know. This is a drama. Oh, Sannyasi twice allowed me to bring people out. In 1981, Christmas night of 81, I'll never forget it, I got a whole motorhome of people and brought them out. We parked on a hill in Laguna Beach, and she brought in one of those spaceships, one with the big bubble on the top, the Variation 5. and did what are called punch out. This beautiful ship went shooting up into the ozone layer, leaving these umbrellas of sparks, and she was explaining the propulsion and the ionization and how it was healing the atmosphere. And that was like the zenith of my career with Pleiadians, showing off, you know, to people, you know, getting to do that. I got to do it once, you know. She said, if you can't handle the harassment and the disbelief, don't worry about it. You're not a Pleiadian contactee very long. It didn't bother me any because I was a rebel since I was a kid anyway. And half the time I'm wrong, but I don't mind making a big stink about it and finding out later I was wrong. That's my personality. Triple Leo, right? So, 1989, I'd had many encounters with him. They'd given me lots of science. I got reels of tape and videos and stuff from different things that happened. 1989, they're saying goodbye. That was 1971 and 1989, 19 years. And she says, we're gone. And, you know, it's like, gone? You know, like, you'll be back maybe in 2 years. Nope, we're gone. And then they meant that. And so I kind of had an attitude. This is October. So November, we live in Laguna Beach on a hill, but up on this hill, and it's like ocean on this side and valley behind and a military base over here. So we have this huge park on the very top of the hill, and it's got tennis courts in it. And most of the contacts were on the second hill over here. Huge, giant public park. I'll never forget this. And Smyasi also said that the Andromedans would do divine intervention. And so I'm on this hill over here jogging, because I run 2 or 3 times a week. And I was just starting to jog around this park. And it was Friday. There's a lot of people there on Friday. It was in the fall. It was November, and it was a warm day. And all of a sudden, I got this voice inside my head. Now, with Pleiadians, you got, first of all, Samathi would give you, I'd feel the sexual urge, you know. You know, I could be sitting on a rock somewhere, and all of a sudden, without even looking at a pretty girl or looking at a dirty magazine or anything, I got the sexual energy. I says, uh-oh, Pleiadians are coming. Then you'd get the hair on the body would rise. And then I'd have a separate voice from my thoughts in my head. That was the pattern. It was always the same thing every time. And when the hair was rising, I said, oh boy, this is going to be fun, you know. And then we'd have a contact. Well, with Liara, I didn't get that. I got a direct voice in the head. And that was it. And a little bit of a physical, but it was definitely a voice in my head, you know. And she says, I'm Liara. And so my feeling was, well, so what? You know, this is, you know. And she says, well, I'll be working with you. We're going to be teaching you holographic stuff, you know, which you're teaching us. That's why I brought up the thing about the O.J. Simpson case today, because all the DNA now, this holographic stuff that's coming up in that. So I said, okay, fine. I says, you're here. Now, what am I supposed to do? And she said, well, we're just getting acquainted now. And I says, first thing I said, right out of my mouth, you know, out of my head or whatever, I said, I suppose you're going to be like the Pleiadians. You're going to be always off in the distance somewhere, and you're going to be a real, you know, nobody's ever going to know you're here except me, and I'm going to have to continue this trip on a heavier level. Because one of the things I told Samyasi is, my God, you know, you guys, you know, you're 350 years old. You've forgotten more science than I'll learn in 10 lifetimes. Why are you dumping me now? You know, I mean, I've got a lot to learn from you. I haven't learned anything yet. I'm just a kid here. And Liara says, no, we're going to be more apparent, you know. I says, what do you mean? She says, well, I says, I suppose you're somewhere around here and nobody can see you. And she says, look. So I felt myself turning around and looking up off to the back. And up in the sky is, oh, I know what she said. She says, we're here right now. And I says, well, I suppose I'm the only one that's going to know you're here. I suppose, you know, that's when I made that smart remark to her, you know. And, I do that sometimes. I mean, you know, if you're going to have to deal with all this all the time, and be a contactee, why not be a smart mouth sometimes, you know? I mean, why say what's on your mind? We're human. You know, we have explosions. It's not like all peace and love when you have contacts with extraterrestrials. I'm sorry. I mean, I got in trouble one time with Samyasi because I thought she was really neat, and I was a bachelor in those days. Yeah. Boy, you can get so far, and they shut you right down, you know? Yeah. Yeah. That's true. So anyway, I look over there in the corner, and there's all of a sudden this huge, you know, we're in this mountain, open sky, and all of a sudden this big square, just an old big light, like a neon, about the color of those neon lights that we just turned off, And this square is about 300 feet across by 300, about a 900 foot square. Big old square in the sky. I says, oh boy, what am I seeing now, you know? And then another one. And then another one comes up. And another one comes up, you know? And another one. There was four of these things. There was four this way. There was four this way. Each one 300 feet across. I saw the ship later. Okay, now here's 300 feet. So we got 1,200 feet. Okay, then this block went over, another block went, and another block went. And all I saw were these squares, but then I saw this. The illumination started showing me that there was a transparent, but I began to see a surface of something. A surface of something like that. And suddenly I realized that these were sections of a giant ship that was slightly out of focus. I could start to see the borderline of what this thing was. So I says, now that's really impressive. Can anybody else see that? I asked her. And she said, look around. So I stopped my head trip, you know, looking off, and I looked. Joggers weren't jogging anymore. Tennis stopped. Tennis court stopped. People start pointing up in the sky. They had no idea what that was, but they were all seeing it, you know. So then she said, now do you believe us? We're not afraid. And that was my first encounter with the Andromedans, and they've been absolutely bizarre ever since, you know. I guess we're running. Well, how much time? We got another minute? Yeah, we're going over time. They always let me go over, but I always run out of time. So anyhow, I'll be doing a workshop tomorrow. If you guys want to answer questions, we'll do it then. We have a booth number 907, which is on the north wall of the thing over there by the bookshop underneath the mezzanine. I'm sorry I can't do questions here, but I figured maybe you want to hear me talk rather than do that. Thank you very much. Okay, I'm out of here. Right? You can get on and go to work now.